The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties, and a lot of those cities, believe it or not, have properties for under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first property out of state in the next 4 months, I encourage you to apply to my out-of-state coaching program. I purchased properties out of state, and it's absolutely changed my life completely. The same is possible for you too. You simply need the right information. That's all it takes. My program will provide you the hands-on support and a step-by-step process to buy that first property within 4 months. So go to outofstatemoney.com to apply today. Again, outofstatemoney.com to apply today, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast, episode 137. A few quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. If you haven't already, take a moment, leave us a five-star rating and review. Also, make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening to this on. It helps us cope in the rankings, helps us to reach more people and spread this message all over the world. So thank you in advance for your support. Also, if you do leave a five-star rating and review, I will read your review for all the listeners. So I can't wait to hear from you. Shout out to everyone who came to the networking event in LA last week. It was a whole lot of fun. I got to meet some listeners of the show. I got to also meet some new listeners of the show who just learned about the show. So thank you so much for everyone who showed up. If you want me to come to your city, if you want me to host a real estate networking event, let me know. And I definitely can't wait to see you in your city. This is a very special episode about Bank of America. Once again, with my guy, Dave Ball, we kind of just gave our opinions and talked about some of the things we've been hearing. So I know you'll get a whole lot out of it. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. If you haven't already, definitely take a moment to subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this. Also, leave us a five-star rating and review. That'll all take you less than 60 seconds to help us out a whole lot. I can't wait to hear from you. If you leave a review, I'll read it on the show. So I better see some next week. Looking forward to hearing from you guys. All right. This is a very special episode. We got Dave Ball out of Dallas, who's back on the show. Dave, thanks for jumping on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Definitely. So this is going to be a special episode. We're going to be talking about the Bank of America program. Did an episode about this a few weeks ago. However, you know, Dave and I are both creators in the real estate space, and we've posted about this, talked about this, and there have been a lot of opinions about this program. So we're going to talk about some of the things that we've seen, that we've heard from people who follow us and otherwise, address some of the misconceptions and really talk about the facts and maybe even rant a little bit. I'm looking forward to that. So just a quick high-level overview of the program. So as you probably know, but maybe you don't, Bank of America is piloting a new home loan program, specifically in Black and Hispanic communities, that's open to all borrowers. You don't have to be Black or Hispanic to take advantage of this opportunity. A couple of the details, there is no down payment, no private mortgage insurance, no minimum credit scores. The factors they'll be using to determine credit worthiness are things like rent, utility bills, auto insurance payments, things like that. There's also no closing costs. And also prospective buyers have to go through a home buyer certification course. Lastly, there's also an opportunity to get a grant of $10,000 to $15,000 to put towards the home so that you walk into it with some equity. But that's basically a high-level overview of the program. They're also going to pilot it in the following cities. So they're going to test it in Charlotte, Dallas, Detroit, LA, and Miami. So that's a high level overview of the show. Anything you want to add, Dave?
No. Excuse me. I think that was a pretty good recap. I would add there are a few closing costs. Like, it's not closing costs free, but there are a few closing costs associated with the loan. But I think they're just reduced.
Got it. So there are closing costs, but it's be far cheaper than probably they would otherwise be.
Correct. Yes.
Got it. So let's jump into it, Dave. What are some of the What's some of the pushback you've gotten on this program? Because you've done videos about it, you've done on YouTube, you've done clips on Instagram. What's some of the pushback you've heard?
So the biggest thing or the biggest misconception I hear about the program, or the biggest complaint, is like the why now. And it's like, why did Bank of America wait until rates were so high? The housing market is on a decline, not a crash, but by the housing market is declining. Why did they wait to release the program now? And so my response to that is they actually didn't. So Bank of America had a very similar program for at least 3 years. So I know it was pre-COVID when I was doing loans, because I remember getting competing bids from folks that had this program for Bank of America. So pre-COVID, they still actually still have it. You can see it on the website. Bank of America has a program where they'll give you up to $17,500 to put towards down payment and a closing cost. So $17,500 is a lot of money, I guess, depending where you're at. Probably not in LA when it comes to buying a home, but that'll pretty much cover the closing costs and down payment on a $300,000 home in most markets. So the answer is they didn't wait to just now to do it. They've had a very similar program, but it's just that folks found out about this program recently because of the headlines, the whole zero down and being combined with the minority community things. It made for a very, very shareable and talk aboutable headline. And then the other aspect is like programs like this, like whether it's Bank of America or whatever company, like a lot of lenders actually have this type of program, but they don't just like snap their fingers and release the program. Like programs like this take like years to release. So it's not like they were sitting around in like March and was like, hey, I see the rates are going up. I think the housing market may take a turn. Let's release this on the minority community right at this point. Like it just doesn't make any sense, like this whole like why now thing. And then the other side of the coin is, let's say they did decide to release it just now. Okay. Like the program is still the program. So I don't get that part of the debate. Is like this whole like why now, and this whole kind of conspiracy that it's designed to somehow unleash on minority communities in at the worst time possible for them to purchase a home.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that too. It's like no one could have, I personally don't think anyone could have predicted the interest rates would be what they were now. Like, you know, to have a program that will need the money to fund like this, like, I just don't see how a company would say, oh, you know, well, we know rates are going to be at historic highs than they've been in the last 14 years. So let's do this program now. And to your point, it's not like a snap of a finger type of situation. And something else I want to mention too is like, there's this outcry about this program, but no, there's no outcry about NACA, which has, in my opinion, it's a lot more difficult to get through. And it's been funded by Bank of America for the last 25, 26 years. No one is saying that though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I would say the other thing that I hear too about this program is, like I said, it's somehow set up to, for this whole concept that somehow like Bank of America wants to give out loans to people that they think would default on the loan just so that they can come and purchase the homes from them later on. So like that also like doesn't really make a lot of sense, because if Bank of America just wanted to buy a home in minority communities, they would just buy the homes. Like they don't need to give out loans to people, hope they'll default, you know, carry the cost of the property, you know, then, you know, get the home. And if someone's not like paying their mortgage, they're probably not taking care of the home, to potentially have to like go through like rehabbing the home, or, you know, going through selling the home at a lower cost than it was before. Like it just doesn't make any sense from that aspect. And then too, like the biggest way like banks make money off of loans is like servicing the loan and like mortgage-backed securities, right? So for folks that may or may not have a mortgage, but I know like I have three mortgages. So in the last 10 years, I've probably called my bank like three or four times in the last 10 years, but they're making money off of servicing the loan. So it's like passive income as far as the bank's concerned. And then the other aspect is like the mortgage-backed securities, where they package up a bunch of mortgages and sell them off to investors. So if they have these loans that folks are defaulting on, like it doesn't work with actually selling the loans to the investors. Like they become pretty much like they lose their value. Like there's no investor wants to buy loans that folks are going to default on like 2 or 3 years from now. So like the whole concept that they would, you know, make up this program for folks to like default on loans that they can't sell to investors, it doesn't make any sense from that aspect either. And so, like I said, I personally, I've worked at Wells Fargo. Like I worked at Chase, and I've given out, like I've worked in minority communities, and I've given out loans to people. And so there's no decree where it's like there's some meeting where it's like, hey, you know, make sure you're targeting these people or that. Like, it just still wouldn't make any sense. Cause you know, like, I'm just an average person. They're average people that work at these banks. Like, somebody would come out and be like, hey, Bank of America came down and said that, hey, make sure you're targeting folks for this loan because this is the plan or something like that. It just doesn't really make any sense on a big scale or small scale as far as a lot of these conspiracy theories that I hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And as somebody who has worked in the mortgage business for quite some time, you know, when you hear people saying, they're doing this so people can foreclose, like, to me, at a high level, it doesn't seem like that would even benefit the bank. Wouldn't they benefit more if you continue to pay your mortgage for the life of the loan than if you foreclosed? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Like I said, it's the ultimate passive income. It's just they give loans to solid borrowers and they never talk to them ever again. Like that, their ideal goal of any mortgage company or anyone servicing a loan is to give out a loan. That's why you go through such a rigorous underwriting process and to never talk to that person ever again, unless they want to refinance. Like that's every mortgage company's optimal situation. It's just to collect money passively off the interest. So like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. They would be going through a process where it was like, where there was like a lot of like back and forth, or, you know, the potential to actually have to, unfortunately foreclose on the loan. And also there's actually a lot of steps before foreclosure. Like lenders will do what's called like a loan modification when you're like a financial hardship where you can't refinance the loan, but you also can't like pay for the current loan due to your current financial situation. Like lenders will also try to like modify the loan, which is basically, and there's a couple ways to modify the loan. One is sometimes they'll forgive like a large past due balance you have. Sometimes they'll just lower the rate on the loan. And then sometimes they'll just like extend the term of the loan. So let's say you have like a 30-year loan and like year 20, you fell on hard times. Like they may extend your loan out to 40 years. So now your $2,000 payment becomes like $1,100 or something like that. So there's a bunch of steps between giving someone a loan and foreclosure. And so like it probably takes like up to a year to foreclose on a home. So like once again, Bank of America would be losing money that whole year that someone is not paying on the loan, whether it's, you know, the property taxes, whether it's the legal fees to foreclose on the home. Like it just doesn't really make a lot of sense. I think once you kind of really, really like dive into like what actually has to happen for a mortgage company to actually foreclose on somebody's home.
Right. And you know, something else is people keep saying, oh, this is why the 2008 crash happened. You know, this is 2008 all over again. But what's important for people to understand is like, it was a different time back then. Anybody who breathed, anybody who could write their name on a paper, anybody with a pulse was able to get a mortgage, right?
Yeah.
There was the Wild Wild West back then. Like people were getting approved for mortgages who literally couldn't qualify and nobody cared. However, what's important for people to understand is there's been a lot more regulation put in place. It's a lot more of a rigorous process to get approved for a mortgage since then. And it's going to be the same thing with this program. Like how would it benefit the bank to approve somebody who can't actually afford the mortgage? Like if the mortgage is $3,000 and your income is $3,500. And if you think you're going to get approved for this program, you're out of your mind. Like it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So how do you respond to that?
Yeah. And so when we look back at 2008, there are basically two big things as far as 2008. As you mentioned on it, like the reckless lending habits. It was like, hey, if you say you make $10,000 a month, you make $10,000 a month. There's no income verification or anything like that. And then the other part, there was just like so much inventory. Builders were building, and there was just this massive amount of inventory back in 2008 compared to now. And so like we're on the exact opposite now. So like mortgage guidelines are just a lot stricter than they were in 2008. I think if folks remember, like when COVID hit, like Chase was actually one of the banks that actually like very, very, very tightened their lending habits. They require lenders to have like a 700 credit score and 20% down. So like banks have actually gone the exact opposite way, and they've gone back to their normal lending habits now. But yeah, it takes a lot more to qualify for a loan now than it did back in 2008. It's like one of the things I hear is folks will be like, hey, well, they're doing like no credit check. So it's not like no credit check. It's not like, hey, we're not looking at your credit at all. That's not a thing. Like similar to, as you mentioned in the beginning, like Bank of America, you know, they underwrite like the NACA loan. So they have experience working with alternative credit. And so a couple of things as far as the loan, it basically goes by like the conventional loan guidelines for the most part outside of credit. So you still need a 50% or less debt to income ratio. Your debt to income ratio is your monthly finance debts, like your minimum payments, like on car payments, student loans, stuff like that, plus your future mortgage payment divided by your income before taxes. That needs to be 50 under 50%, just like a conventional loan. And then the other part as far as like credit, so they'll use like the non-traditional credit as far as like utilities, car payments and stuff like that. However, like it's not just like, hey, you paid your car payment, you're good to go. You need to have like three trade lines as far as, you basically mean to have like three trade lines or three credit scores. And then also you cannot have any late within like the last 6 months on your credit report. That's why they need to see your credit report. And so if you have a late in the last 6 months, you know, sorry about that, you can't get the loan. And in the last 12 months, you can only have like one 30-day late on your entire credit report. And so basically you can have a late between like month 6 and month 12, just one 30-day late, which is a lot. I mean, you can apply for normal loans, conventional FHA, and have lates like within the last, I mean, it'll impact your credit score, but you can have lates, you know, applying for a conventional loan or FHA loan. So they're basically looking at like your habits, not necessarily your credit score, but they're actually like looking at your habits. So another big difference with this loan is that it's manually underwritten, meaning that the underwriter is actually looking at every aspect of the loan. Like with there's two types of underwriting. There's manual underwriting where an underwriter is like looking at every document and they're making the decision. Then there's automated underwriting where your information is plugged into like a computer system. And then the underwriter is verifying that the correct stuff was put into the system. But in this situation, they're actually going through all your documents and basically giving you a thumbs up or thumb down as far as this loan. So it's still a strenuous like qualification process. It's not just like a paper stamp like they were doing back in the, you know, the, like you said, the wild, wild west of the 08s, 07s, that time frame.
Yeah. And I appreciate you mentioning it because I think it's important for people to understand that, because you look online, you look on Instagram, like it's easy to get caught up in groupthink because, yeah. You know, and let's be honest, like everybody, like if, unless you were like a 5 or 6 year old at the time, you know, somebody who lost their home during that crisis. So I think part of it is like stemming from that, like personal experience, like either with your parents or extended family, friends, et cetera, or just ignorance, which is not your fault. Like we're here to educate you and tell you what is actually true. And so it's not, you're not going to walk into Bank of America and say, hey, I want to apply for this. This is what I make. Boom. And that's it. Like you're going to have to go through a process and they're going to make sure that to the greatest of their ability that to make sure that you can afford to pay this loan so they can make money. Like that's how they make money if you're paying your loan. So I'm glad you touched on that.
You mentioned two things, but another thing I think is honestly, there's people that are just putting controversial information out there just to get clicks and likes. Like I've seen lenders, like actually like licensed lenders putting out information where it's clearly false. Whereas like you're a licensed lender. Yeah, like I understand like civilians not understanding like mortgage guidelines, but I've seen stuff for like licensed lenders. I just put out misinformation. It's honestly just for like, just for clicks and controversy. Cause you know, you'll get a bunch of comments if you put out like a conspiracy theory about, you know, whatever bank it is. And so it gets a lot of likes as well. So I'm really glad we're having this conversation. Cause I think hopefully you're getting some facts and maybe changing your perception on this, or maybe so like one of these clickbait things that folks have put out on the street that just flat out isn't true.
Yeah. What are some of those things you've seen from those in the industry that's just false?
One of the things we haven't addressed yet is the whole like, this is here, this is Bank of America's plan to gentrify community X, Y, and Z. It's just like, and the irony is the folks that are discouraging folks in the minority community from using the program will lead to gentrification. Because if you're telling all the black and brown folks, the banks out to get you, don't use the program. Because like you said, it's not just for, it's for those, it's for people in those areas. But like I said, there's no race qualification for the program. So we're discouraging minorities from using the program because of the big bad banks. Then guess who's going to move in? The white community is going to move in the neighborhood, use the program 0% down. And yes, the neighborhood definitely will gentrify. And then like two, gentrification is happening no matter what. Like, it's not like gentrification started 3 weeks ago when Bank of America launched this program. Like it's already happening. So this opportunity for folks like in the community to actually use this program and to, you know, maybe purchase a home in the community they couldn't afford due to like maybe credit or down payment issues. And so, and like I said, the biggest thing is because lenders know this too, is that like this is not, this program from Bank of America is not new. Like there's probably, I'm trying to think of, I've probably come across like off the top of my head, like 5 or 10 banks that have like similar programs. I'm talking about like 0% down program. So it's not new. It's just that, you know, Bank of America has a bigger PR department than some of the smaller local banks that have these programs. And they're able to, you know, get articles put out in USA Today, Washington Post, you know, every article. And then once something like that comes out, it's just super, super shareable because everyone's going to have an opinion on, you know, 0% down loans, no credit check, minority community. Everyone's going to have some sort of opinion on that, you know, whether it's based on fact, fiction, or just trying to drum up controversy.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with that. And on a similar note, one thing I'm seeing that's just so, one thing that's flawed, people think this program equals redlining, and that is false. It's the complete opposite, actually. Redlining, if this was redlining, yeah, then Bank of America would specifically say to Black and Latino communities, we will not lend. That's what it was in redlining. Yeah. We couldn't get loans in Black and Brown communities. So it's completely false. Yeah, it's like I've done at least one episode. Right. I've done at least one episode where I explained in detail redlining. I recommend going back and checking that out because it's like not false. It's literally the complete opposite. Like if you go and Google what is redlining, you'll see it's the complete opposite of what you think it is.
Yeah. And so like, so I'm glad you pointed that out as well too, because folks will, I think somehow folks are thinking that, because I've seen this too, is that Bank of America is like, they think it's redlining because Bank of America is like, will only lend in this communities. Like if you're Black and Brown, like you could only buy like these five cities. It's like, no, Bank of America has every single other loan program they've always had. Like if you don't want to live in Detroit, you want to live in Auburn Hills somewhere, you know, you can use a conventional loan and buy there. You can use a FHA loan and buy there. It's not like they've got rid of, if you're a minority, you got to use these programs. You can only live in these five cities and that's it. And so, yeah, you can just use any other program if you got beef with it. And so definitely the exact opposite of red lining.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Like, you know, before I started the show, redlining and just learning about that really inspired me to start the show and just to dispel some of those rumors. But I mean, people, you got to look in and research your history. Like, this is not like, it's almost, it's really sad that people think that, like, you know, I think it's because it's a buzzword. It's easy to just agree with it because everybody's saying it in the comments and stuff like that. But it's like redlining specifically would be the opposite. Like they're incentivizing people to get mortgages and invest in properties in these communities, you know? So, and like you said as well, like it's at the end of the day, it's another option. It may not be the right option for you based upon your personal circumstances and what kind of loan program you want or whatever. And that's okay. There's countless of other programs that you can use and loan products that you can use to buy a property.
Yeah, most definitely. And so also, if you want to jump back to like why these programs exist in the first place, like you mentioned, due to redlining. So whenever you hear like banks have these programs as part of, have like these programs targeted minority communities, it's part of like what's called like the Community Reinvestment Act. It's like, I can't remember what year came out, but it's like a mandate from Congress that these banks have to put aside a certain amount of funds towards minority communities due to just the blatant discrimination in the past. So once again, like the, like I said, these banks, like they're not doing it out of the kindness of the heart. I'm sure they're good people. The banks are like, hey, you know, maybe we should do program X, Y, and Z, but they're actually mandated to do these programs due to discrimination in the past, redlining.
Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate?
Yeah.
Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance?
You know who it is.
The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community. No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, where's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 2 times per month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to blackrealestatedialogue.com. That's blackrealestatedialogue.com. It's the real estate investing community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
Definitely. And here's another one I would love your opinion on. I'm definitely going to give mine. A lot of people, so there's an opportunity to get a $10,000 to $15,000 grant to go towards the purchase of the home with this program so people can have some equity. Now, there are people who are saying, well, that doesn't mean anything in Miami. That doesn't mean anything in LA. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I believe like for those who don't have that, and maybe they can have that in reserves instead, that means a lot for that person. It may not mean a lot for you. Like maybe you have 50, 60,000 in the bank that you can put towards a property, but for somebody who doesn't have it, that's a whole lot. So what do you think about that, Dave?
$10,000 is a lot of money. I think in LA, Iowa, Dallas, DC, like $10,000, that's a lot of money as far as I'm concerned. So like I said, I think like the LA market is probably different than all those other markets just because that's like a high cost of living area. So I think they would do like the $15,000 out in LA. But like I said, it's the comparison is to zero, right? It's not like there's some other option. So it's like either it's a lot of money and it's hard to save $15,000, or it's not a lot of money. You should have $15,000, right? Because you can't say it's not a lot of money, but then also not have the $15,000. And so, yeah, I don't know. That's a lot of money. Like $50,000 is a lot of money, I think, any way you slice it. So that's just kind of my take on that. And once again, it's a 0% down program to begin with, right? So it's not like you need to have 3% down to use the program, and they're only giving you $10,000 or $15,000. It's a 0% down program. So if you think you're going to be in a position where like your loan to value ratio is too high, because let's say you're buying a $500,000 home in LA, and what's that I can't do the math in my head, but $10,000 compared to like $500,000. Like, so now your loan balance is going to be 490. You think like your loan to value ratio isn't great. Well, save some more money, put some more money down, or just don't buy the home. Like you said, you don't have to use the program. Like if you don't want to. So I think the fact it being a lot of money is moot, because you can just not get the loan if you think you're going to be put in a disadvantaged situation because you don't have like 3% to put down on the home, and they're only giving you $15,000. So just save up a little bit more money until you're a little bit more comfortable to purchase a home.
Definitely. I did that quick math. So 10,000 out of the 500K, that's 2%.
I don't want to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the interesting thing is, right, let's say you're in LA and just to have round numbers, it's a $1 million home. The 3.5% of that is 35,000. So if you have, let's say you get the 15K, you know, that's not bad. And the thing is as well, like, you still need to be able to afford the monthly payment. Like, if you can't afford the monthly payment, then you can't afford the monthly payment. You need to figure out a different option, right? So that's something else I think it's important for people to consider too. And building off of that, a lot of people don't like this program because they're like, well, you're putting people in a position where they won't have a lot of equity. They're going to be upside down if the market shifts. What are your thoughts on that?
So the loan that has the highest or the lowest rate of default of any loan is the VA loan that's 0% down. So like the concept that somehow the down payment, there's a correlation between the down payment and people being like jammed up. It just doesn't work. Now, I will acknowledge like the VA loan is a veteran loan, and the government jobs are some of the most like stable jobs like that we have in the U.S. So I will acknowledge that as part of the VA loan having the lowest default rate of any loan. But the idea that somehow there's this huge correlation between a 0% down loan and people defaulting it's not accurate. I mean, there's the USDA loan, which is 0% down. As you mentioned, like NACA is 0% down. They have a pretty low default rate as well, because it's all about the financial responsibility of the person buying the home. Like the numbers work within your budget, they work within your budget. So I mean, it's like if you've been paying, I don't know, $3,000 for rent for the last month, you should be able to pay a mortgage that's, you know, $2,700, $2,800. And you want to make sure you're factoring like, you know, maintenance and stuff like that into your monthly living expense. So if you've been paying $3,000 a month for rent, you probably do want to get a mortgage that has a principal, interest, taxes, and insurance payment of less than $3,000. But it's all about just how financially responsible the person is and making sure that the numbers work within their budget. And so I think that's the beauty of the program, is that they look at the person's financial responsibility, their ability to pay their bills on time and not default, and say that, hey, this person's been paying rent for a year. They've had one late in the last year or no late in the last 6 months. I think they're probably financially responsible to buy, to make the payment. So, and that's another reason. That's why they're test driving the loan program. They're not just like, hey, whole United States, here goes the program. We're going to launch it in these six cities. We're going to gather the data. And if the data looks good, we're going to launch it nationwide. If not, maybe we'll have to tweak the program a little bit. So you got to try something. So, I mean, but folks will always have a complaint no matter what. They could be like, hey, 100% down, we're giving you all the money. Folks are complaining about the property taxes. So it's just, folks always find a reason to complain about something.
Definitely. I mean, something else that makes me think about is a lot of people end up house poor. A lot of people end up house poor because they try to get the home, the most expensive home they can qualify for. And more likely than not, it's a bad decision to do that. You know, I think there's an element of personal responsibility too. To your point, building off of your point, like you got to make sure all the numbers make sense within your overall budget, and you're not just going for the most expensive home you can afford, you can get qualified for, because that's not necessarily the home that you should be trying to buy.
Yeah.
So I think that's something else people need to consider too, as well as making sure you have reserves. Like even if you get approved for this program, you need to make sure you have reserves. You need to make sure you have money for maintenance if things go wrong, if you need to update stuff. Like it's not just, hey, they're letting me in, I got approved, let's do it. Like you shouldn't like be on your last going into something like this. Yeah. You want to make sure you have like some money set aside for when you need to fix stuff.
Yeah. And honestly, that's this program, or honestly any program, because you can have 3% down and have no reserves when it's done with a conventional loan. So yeah, like you said, it's all about that person being financially responsible. So like specifically for this program, like if you do have a 12-year like rental history, there's actually no reserve requirements. But like if you don't have any like history of like paying rent for the last 12 months, they do actually require you to have 3 months of reserves. So they do have that requirement. Oh. If you don't have that history of actually making a year of mortgage payment. And that's like, hey, if you were, you know, maybe staying with your folks, staying with your friend, that's why you don't have any like payment history. Like if you've been renting and you like miss payments, you're not going to qualify for the program at all. So
definitely. How do you respond to people who say this is not a good idea because if the market tanks, then these people will be upside down? What are your thoughts on that?
So my advice when you're buying a home, no matter if it's a up market, down market, sideways market, is you shouldn't be buying a home that you're going to be, you should plan to be in that home for at least at a minimum 3 years, but I say 3 to 5 years anyways, because so the market going up or down will have no impact on your life as a homeowner at all. So like, let's say you buy a home on Monday, for some reason, the market tanks, like the housing market crashes 10% on Tuesday. Like what actually happens? So you, the homeowner, you're probably like, crap, man, I missed the dip, as they call it. But as far as your monthly payment, like literally nothing happens. The only thing that actually happens, it would be maybe a year from now when they reassess the taxes in your area, like the taxes may be lower on your property. So your monthly payment may actually go down if the market if the market kind of tanks there, or your insurance may go down. So nothing, as long as you're purchasing within your budget, like nothing actually happens unless for some reason you had this plan to like flip this home or sell within a year. So there's actually like nothing that really happens to you. And so if you're holding that home for like, you know, 3 to 5 years, the market will eventually like come back. If you look at any chart of home prices, it goes up just like the, you know, the S&P 500. So I'm not sure when this will air, but you know, right now it's like the stock market is down like 23% right now, the S&P 500. But if you go back and look at a 10-year chart, we're up over that 10 years. That's the same way I look at like housing. So we're going to go down. You can't time the market. And so when we talk about time of the market, it's even harder to time the housing market than it is the stock market. Because you can see stock market prices like in real life. Like you can see, hey, the price of Apple is $130 a share or whatever it is right now. You can actually see what that is in real time. When it comes to housing data, the housing data is always a month to 2 months behind. So whenever you're seeing the news, it's reporting news that happened 2 months ago. So you don't know what's happening in real time. And then for the market to actually turn, you're probably not going to see it until like you're probably not going to know until like 4 or 5 months after it happens. So there's really no way to even time the bottom of the market as well. So you just got to, you know, make the best decision for you, for your financial situation. You know, maybe you can negotiate some deals while the market is turning a little bit, although it's still by definition a seller's market because we're at, I think, 3.3 months of inventory. Like a 6 months of inventory is kind of a neutral mark between a seller's and buyer's market. So technically we're actually still in a seller's market despite all the doom and gloom. But long story short, as long as the numbers are within your budget, the market going down will have like no impact on your financial situation. Like I said, unless for some reason you wanted to sell that home within the next year, which probably was not a good plan to begin with. So,
do you really think investing in real estate is too expensive? Well, you wrong about that. Presenting a beginner's guide to buying your first out-of-state property, a Black Real Estate Dialogue course. That's right, it's the new course presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue, teaching you how to develop the investor's mindset, the advantages of investing out of state, getting your finances in order, finding the right location, assembling your team, creating financing strategies, how to find and analyze properties, how to find tenants, real-life case studies, and so much more in bonus content. Oh yeah, did we mention you have lifetime access? My goodness. If you have dreams of buying a property out of state but have no idea where to start, well, this is the guide for you. Learn the tips from someone with firsthand experience.
Definitely. And also know you did have an opportunity to talk to somebody who works for Bank of America. Is there any additional information about the program that perhaps is not like in the articles and things like that that people should know?
So the only things we didn't cover is the... there are income limits on this, so it depends on your market. So it's $132,000 is like the max income for like what I call normal markets. I'm not sure what it is in the high cost of living markets. I guess LA would be the only high cost of living market for this program. So it may be a little bit higher in LA. You can actually use this program with a multifamily property, but you have to put down at least 5%. So, you know, Bank of America will break up to 3% to the table, and you'll have to come out of pocket the other 2%. And so that's a good opportunity as well, because you have to use, you know, 3.5% down if you're using the FHA loan. And then, you know, this doesn't come with the mortgage insurance that will come with the FHA loan as well. Like I said, it comes with mandatory in-person home buyer education. So you have to do like an 8-hour course in person as far as home buyer education. So yeah, and like I said, it just kind of mirrors conventional guidelines for the most part. It's kind of, I think, the only things we didn't cover as far as like the guideline portion of the program.
Got it. So if it's a multi-unit, it sounds, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like that 10 to 15K grant would turn to them putting up 3% of that price and the buyer coming with 2. Is that the correct understanding?
Yeah, you're correct. So Bank of America put down a max. So like I said, whatever's higher or whatever's lower, so it'll cap it at 3%, is the most that they'll put towards the program. So if you're like if you're buying like a $300,000 home and like the max money they'll give you is $10,000 in your market, but 3% of 300,000 is 9,000. So you'll get the $9,000 to put towards your down, and also it's your down payment and closing costs. And so like I said, it's probably when it's all said and done, it probably contribute maybe like maybe 2.5% towards your down payment, because you got to factor in your closing costs as well. But yeah, somewhere between 2-2.5% is probably what you need to bring to the table if you're buying it in multifamily property.
Got it. So it's like the 10 to 15K, between that and the 3%, whichever is lower, they'll bring to the table. Is that right? Or is it whichever is higher?
So you can get no more than 3%.
Gotcha.
So if you just do that math, you can get no more than 3%. So like I said, if you're buying a $600,000 home, you know, 3% is $18,000, but you're capped at probably the $10,000 or $15,000 there. If you're buying a $300,000 home, the 3% is $9,000. So you only get the $9,000. So yeah, I guess whatever is lower then would be the answer there.
Got it. Can we trust big banks?
So my thing is always, can you trust yourself is what I tell folks. So you should never be, whether it's a home, a car, I don't know, you know, fruit on the side of the road, like you should be able to do your own due diligence. Like you should have some sort of knowledge of the situation before you walk into the situation. So you should never walk into a bank, like just blank slate, like, hey, I'm here to buy a home. Somebody point me in the right direction. And I say that because no matter how honest, so like, I think I'm a super like honest person. I have very good integrity, but like, I'll tell you, I worked at Chase. So if you walked into Chase and I was sitting at that table and you were just like, hey, I want to get a loan, and you just stroll into the bank, one, I'm going to be like, I try to treat everybody equal, but if you're just strolling into the bank, like with no knowledge of anything, I'm just like, oh, this person really isn't that serious to begin with. So I'll go through and help you with the process. But then also too, I'm only going to recommend you the programs that I have. Like, I'm not going to say that, hey, like we didn't have USDA loans at Chase. So I'm not going to say, and they were USDA loans like in the general area where I work. So I would never suggest a USDA loan, even though that may be the best scenario for you. I'm going to say, hey, use a conventional loan, use a FHA loan for your scenario. I would never recommend that. Like I would never recommend NACA to a customer, because no big bank or no bank does, or no lender does NACA loans outside of NACA. So I always say you need to trust yourself to have an understanding of the mortgage guidelines. So you need to understand three things before you walk into any bank. You need to understand where your credit is, have an idea of where your credit is. You can use like your banking app. I mean, that's like your Vantage 3 score model. That'll give you a general idea, but just go like to annualcreditreport.com and pull your credit report, and it'll show you like what's, if you have any derogatory items on your credit report, or you can go like to myfico.com and get your actual credit score pulled. And you want to get like your FICO 2, 4, and 5 pulled. That's what the lenders use. So you should have an understanding of like where your credit is. You should have some sort of general understanding of where your debt to income ratio is. And you should have some sort of understanding of like what loan program you want to use, because that helps determine like your property type as well. And that also helps inform how much money you'll need to buy a home. So if you have some sort of general understanding of those three concepts, like if you actually ever reject it from, if you actually like decline during the loan process, you at least have enough information to go back to your lender and say, hey, you know, why was I declined? Was it for one of these three reasons? And then to kind of dig a little bit deeper as far as like the reason that you were declined. But I'd always say, can you trust yourself? Like banks are not your friend, but like no for-profit business is your friend. Like they're just not, no matter how nice the person is, like they're not your friend. Like I'm friendly with customers, but we're not friends. Like, you know, I was very friendly with clients, but we're not friends. I'm just here to get a transaction done. I'm just a nice person in general, so I'll be nice to you. And honestly, the nicer I am to you, the hopefully the smoother the transaction goes, and the more likely you're to recommend me to clients. So I mean that's then other people that are super friendly and, you know, very amicable. But like I was friendly, but I was never trying to be anyone's friend as far as my clients. And so don't expect your lender to be your friend. Just hope they know what they're talking about, and be able to do your own due diligence just to vet what they're saying, because you'll never understand the guidelines as much as your lender will. So that just is what it is. So
definitely. So it sounds like, you know, people should do their own due diligence and have some baseline level of knowledge prior to talking to a bank, lender, whatever you want to call it, about a particular program. And it's not so much about the name on the institution as much as about you doing your research and coming prepared to ask questions and vet the process yourself as if you're going through it.
Yeah, exactly. And so like, just one more thing is like I said, I used to work at Chase and Wells Fargo and small lenders. I was not a different person at any of those. I'm the exact same person at all the institutions I've worked at. And so, but I think, and I'm not defending any bank or anybody that's doing anything unsavory, but like Wells Fargo is in the news a lot because they've done wrong. They're a big name as well. I think that's the thing a lot of people miss is like when Wells Fargo does something, like if 1% of the employees at Wells Fargo mess up, that's, I don't know, that's 10,000, 20,000 employees. That's a big headline. Like that's going to lead CNN. That's going to lead like Fox News. But if like you're a regional like mortgage company like messes up, like no one cares about them because that's not going to garner headlines. Like no one's going to see that. I don't know. You know, Jim's mortgage company, they were discriminating against people in the town of Des Moines, Iowa. Like that's not leading CNN just because that doesn't get clicks. Just similar to like what I mentioned. Like there are a bunch of budget companies that have 0%. There's many companies that have some sort of 0% down program as part of the Community Reinvestment Act, but Bank of America is a big name. That's why that article kind of spread like wildfire. But trust me, there's this most likely the same percentage of people doing unsavory acts at your local lender as they are at the big lenders. The big lenders just make the headlines. So, and honestly, they're probably less likely because they're watched over a lot more than like your kind of local or regional lender. So I'll just leave it at that. So I've heard some horror stories as far as small lenders doing things. So
yeah, definitely. Is there anything else you've heard that from like, you know, your followers in the comments on YouTube, on Instagram that you think should be addressed that you think should be addressed?
So just in general, so like at this time right now, and I just think we're in a volatile part of the housing market. So you'll probably hear a lot of folks talk about, is the housing market going to crash? And so my question, whenever I'm asking anybody, whenever anyone's talking about, is the housing market going to crash? My question is like, how do you define a crash? Cause my definition of a crash personally is a 20% decline in the market or home prices going down to where they were 2 years ago. So when I'm talking about a crash, that's what I'm talking about. Some people's definition of a crash is I heard somebody say they saw a home price reduced on Zillow. And so like, I think that whenever you're having that conversation, you need to make sure you guys are on the same page as what a crash is in the first place, because like I said, my definition is not necessarily right. That's just how I define a crash. There's no like dictionary definition of a crash. There's no like, there's no like actual definition of what a market crash is. I think, especially when the market is volatile like this and the market is declining, we just need to figure out like what terms we're talking about in the first place when it comes to a housing crash. Because home prices can decrease, that doesn't mean they're crashing, right? So I mean, it's like a car can, if a car's going 80 miles an hour and it slows down to 20, it didn't stop. So I mean, that's kind of where the market is right now. And so I think some of the data I've seen is that the home prices are expected to continue to decline into like 2023. But I would say two things. You can't time the market. Like I said, all the data you're looking at is historical. And then also, so I don't even know if this is what you're asking, but I'm about to go on a little tangent, sorry. But also, I think we realize, you know, so this is another example of just people seeing the headlines and not actually like reading articles. So I think we all hopefully are aware that the Fed raised the cost to borrow money by 0.75% or 75 basis points, like the benchmark rate. And so that happened last week. So I guess you know when we're recording this, because this happened, or this week, I guess, a couple of days ago. And so you may have noticed that actually nothing happened with interest rates for the most part. And that's because all this information of rates being raised is public knowledge. Once again, folks only like headlines are put out to like get folks' attention. But this 75% basis point raise has been out for months. Like folks knew this was coming. the mortgage lenders knew this was coming. That's why rates actually went up like 2 weeks before the Fed actually raised rates, was because banks are like 90% sure that's what happens. So they raise rates in anticipation of that. And they're just like, hey, if for some reason Jerome Powell changes his mind when he gets to the podium, I guess we can just lower rates back down, but we're not going to be caught with our pants down or look at watching, you know, TV to see what Jerome Powell is going to do. And so another thing because this is not a headline, but you have to actually like go in the articles, was that the Federal Reserve is planning to raise rates. So they're going to meet two more times this year. And so the Fed is planning to raise rates, or they penciled in a rate raise of 75 basis points and 50 basis points for the end of the year as well. So potentially, if like this rate hike does not stave off inflation, like we could see rates go up another 1.25, or the cost to borrow money go up another 1.25% as well. So interest rates are probably not going to get any lower anytime soon. So I've seen this may shrink out to like 2024 sometime in that area. So six may be the new normal. I don't know. 6 months from now, you may be like, man, I wish I got those 6% rates, because it's 7%. So
yeah,
you can't tie the market, just make the best financial decision possible. And hopefully you can refinance down the line if you do choose to purchase a home.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'd say, you know, in conclusion, do your due diligence, and the program is either a fit for you or it's not. And if it's not, that's okay. Share with somebody who it might be a fit for. Share with somebody who's trying to get in the market. And there are a number of other programs that you can check out that might be a better fit for you if this one is not a good fit for you. Yes. So I think, you know, that's what it boils down to, man.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So anything else you want to share, Dave?
No, that's all I got. I guess if you want to check me out, you can check me out on my podcast or my YouTube channel. You can check me out at House Rich, the First Time Home Buyer Show. Try to break down the home buying process as simple as possible and go a lot more in depth on things that folks simply don't. So I like to do a little bit more than just kind of read the headlines. I'll say that. Also, I have a Facebook group as well. You can join. It's called First Time Home Buyer School, and so you can join that. Kind of go a little bit deeper into topics. You can catch me on IG or TikTok at Coins and Culture. That's my IG there. And if you're looking to buy a home anywhere in the United States, reach out to me. I have a referral network as well that I can connect you with reputable realtors and lenders. So still do your due diligence, but I'll kind of do your due diligence for you as well. So yeah, there you go.
Appreciate it, Dave. Thanks for engaging in that banter. I appreciate that.
Oh, appreciate you having me on to clear up a lot of the nonsense that I think we've both seen on. Online. Yeah, or yeah. If you, I'll say this, if you heard this whole episode, you still think, we're BSing us, I'll say you can DM me. I won't speak for Sam, but you can DM me. Say I don't, and just let me know legitimately why you disagree with what we had to say. So
all opinions are welcome. All opinions are welcome. I just come with some facts and we can talk about it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, everyone. Appreciate you all listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. If you didn't leave a 5-star rating or review in the beginning of the episode, you can do it now. And so I look forward to hearing from you and reading your review for your listeners. Thank you all again. Looking forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's B-R-E-D Podcast. Until next time.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt. A classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but If you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.